Where does all our waste go? Pretty much everywhere. Into landfills and recycling centers, into rivers and oceans, and even into the air we breathe. We're choking on waste, and it's affecting our health, our economy, and our climate. How we got here and what we can do about it is the subject of the new book, Total Garbage: How We Can Fix Our Waste and Heal Our World, by Edward Humes. Edward is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author, and he joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
My name is Edward Humes. I've spent my writing career immersing in character-driven narratives, first as a newspaper writer and now as a nonfiction author. My work has ranged from a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation of military helicopter crashes called Death in the Dark to a year embedded in the Los Angeles Juvenile Court for my Penn Award-winning book, No Matter How Loud I Shout. Today, I'd like to share with you a few takeaways from my new book, Total Garbage: How to Fix Our Waste and Heal Our World. The first takeaway starts with the question at the heart of Total Garbage. What if our biggest environmental crises, from plastic pollution to climate change, are all symptoms of just one disease and it's something we can actually fix? That's right, the planet has an arch villain: waste. Americans live in the most wasteful civilization in history. And this goes way beyond what we roll to the curb each week. It's in what we eat and drink and how we cook. Waste is the main thing you pay for in your utility bills and at the gas pump. Waste is so deeply embedded in our economy, products, and daily lives that we see it as normal, if we see it at all. But here's the good news. Fixing our waste doesn't have to be about giving up stuff we love. It's about upgrading to stuff we're going to love more. And that shift in thinking can save the planet. That's because reframing our seemingly unsolvable, earth-destroying crises as byproducts of waste is powerful and hopeful. Plus, there's no partisan divide where the other side says, "Yay, waste!" In fact, I have found there are game changers right in our neighborhoods, blue state and red, tackling waste and the environmental catastrophes it drives. And more often than not, they're actually saving and making money while they're at it. It's the greatest opportunity of our age and our most important challenge, because more than what we use, it's what we squander that's killing us. Don't believe me? Consider this. We waste 40% of our food, and that's not just what turns furry in the fridge. America's chemically soaked factory farms are so wasteful, they depend on massive public subsidies, even as they sell produce with 30 to 70% fewer vitamins and minerals than naturally grown fruit and veggies. Our fossil fuel burning power plants, 19th century technology even Thomas Edison disparaged, and America's second largest source of carbon emissions, waste 67% of their energy. Our gasoline cars are even worse. Gas guzzlers waste $4 out of every $5 we spend at the pump, which is why transportation is America's biggest driver of climate disruption. And then there's our broken recycling system and the plastic pollution that failure creates. Microplastics have become an unintended part of our diet, lurking in our food, water, and even our beer. Doctors are finding this toxic fossil fuel substance in our hearts, lungs, wombs, and even newborn babies' poop. We may be consuming up to a credit card's worth of plastic every week. So yes, it's what we waste that's costing us and killing us most. But those are just the stakes and the opportunity. Here are some of the solutions Total Garbage explores. Kill your lawn and plant a vegetable garden. Growing your own fruits and vegetables is one of the best choices you can make for the planet's health and your family's. The payoff? Tastier, more nutritious, and cheaper veggies that strip away much of the waste built into industrial agriculture. Call it the home field advantage. Jemiah Harkins, a former financier and now a master of urban cultivation, adds social justice and the battle against food apartheid in underserved neighborhoods to his reasons for growing our own food. His South Los Angeles nonprofit, CropSwap LA, builds beautiful urban microfarms in food deserts. he can turn 1,000 square feet of grass into enough veggies and fruit for 25 to 40 families a week, right where it's needed most. His lawn conversions use solar-powered water recycling to do all this with only 8% of the water that grass consumes. He says a community fully committed to fostering these micro-farms in homes and schools can help end hunger and reduce dependence on wasteful, plastic-wrapped processed food. Meanwhile, anyone can plant their own version of this. It's a joyous family activity that can happen in a yard, on a balcony, or in a simple tabletop greenhouse that can be surprisingly affordable for apartment-dwelling green thumbs. As Jemiah Hargens of CropSwap LA says, why mow your yard when you can eat your yard? Next up are two takeaways about plastic waste. This is something we can and should all reduce on the home front, given that water or food stored in the stuff sends 100 times more plastic down your gullet than food and drink that doesn't touch plastic. Ultimately, though, this is not a consumer problem. It's a producer problem. So the first plastic takeaway is support polluters pay laws and the leaders who embrace them. Officially known as producer responsibility laws, Maine was first and other states are following suit. These laws shift the cost of recycling, or lack thereof, from taxpayers to manufacturers who make the mess, saving taxpayers big bucks. This isn't regulation, says environmentalist Sarah Nichols, architect of the Maine law. It's pay for what you break capitalism and an incentive to make less polluting and more reusable products. This is what we had for centuries until the 1970s, when big brands and plastic makers shifted from returnable and reusable glass and replaced it with the so-called convenience of unrecyclable plastics. The rest is plastic pollution history. So Sarah's law is simply restoring normalcy. Individual choices and actions really do make a difference. A single mom and sustainability director for a small nonprofit, Sarah Nichols sold her idea one town council, legislator, and local business leader at a time over an 8-year period. In each town, she recruited a local person committed to the idea to help spread the word and line up other supporters. She called this army of volunteers her Marges, named for the first such volunteer she recruited years earlier. Long story short, Sarah and her Marges wrote, campaigned, testified at the legislature, and won. Total Garbage includes an extensive list of solutions we can all embrace, but my favorite is entitled 10 Tips from Sarah Nichols on How to Be a Marge, because we all need to be Marges. The next takeaway is about the most wasteful thing we do, transportation. Drive the real vehicle of the future. The car of the future should be designed for how we actually use our cars, and it's an undeniable fact that the average driver travels only 37 miles a day, not 300. 93% of our car trips in America are 25 miles or less. More than half are less than 3 miles, which means EV range anxiety is a marketing and media creation, and it has stuck us with wasteful, overpriced, obese vehicles designed for long road trips we rarely bake. In short, as the model for a clean transportation future, your Tesla is garbage. The shift we need here, if we really want to get lots of butts into EVs fast, is much simpler. We need to stop the failed strategy of trying to make everyone swap their gas guzzlers for costly big EVs. Instead, we should focus on the electric version of the original VW Beetle, the super cheap second car that was for nearly 2 decades the best-selling car in America. $1,800 new in 1969, about $15,000 in today's dollars. Would a short-range little EV sell? Well, it's already here, and people love it. Just ask Mayor Kim Leonard of Peachtree City, Georgia, where 40,000 residents have happily made mini EVs their money-saving mainstay for years, thanks to 100 miles of protected roadway and marked lanes where golf carts, e-bikes, and e-trikes are king. In her town, traffic jams, High insurance rates and fatal crashes just don't exist. Most residents still have regular cars. They just stay parked most of the time. Yeah, the car of the future is a golf cart. People here spend a lot less on transportation, Mayor Leonard says. Also, the views on our pathways are beautiful, with the lakes and the woods. Cars are solitary. These golf carts are for something different, for taking the kids out for pizza and ice cream on a Saturday night, for driving to school. And they are just fun to drive. They are social. I arrived in Peachtree pretty skeptical about this, thinking golf carts were a pretty poor substitute for cars. I left thinking my car was a pretty poor substitute for a golf cart. My final takeaway is about how a rural farm town can go green without really trying. The farm town of the future is visible long before you reach the city limits, thanks to the pair of gleaming white wind turbines rising high above the flat, fertile terrain. Clean wind energy flows into the local grid and also powers the manufacture of climate-friendly fertilizer, a game-changing technology. Closer in, cows graze next to elevated solar panels that provide welcome shade in summer. A countywide composting operation takes care of food and ag waste. Electric buses provide public transit and take the school kids to school, too. And most public buildings have rooftop solar. Even the local liquor store, city-owned, is solar-powered. The shop motto, "We chill your beer with the sun." So where is this environmental nirvana? Denmark? Germany? Maybe some upscale California farm town? Nope. This is Morris, Minnesota, population 5,206, a conservative rural farm town that went for Trump by 22 points in 2020. This deep dive into renewable energy and sustainability arose from the town's partnership with the local liberal arts college campus on projects aimed at building rural self-sufficiency, saving tax dollars, and cutting waste, the local farm population's top priorities. The genial and canny head of sustainability at the campus, Troy Goodnow, knew those common sense goals would lead to choices that also happened to be good for the planet. Goodnow was just pitching a different and arguably a much bigger tent to get there. "We never made it about climate," the city manager, Blaine Hill, says. "We just did it because it makes sense. And the more we did, the more we wanted to do." That partnership has flourished for years and is now known as the Morris Model. Because when one conservative rural town goes there, it makes it safe for neighbors to do the same. It's now spread to a dozen other farm towns in Minnesota, and other communities around the country are looking for opportunities to do the same. In closing, this big idea is not just trash talk. Reframing our environmental problems as manifestations of waste isn't just semantics. It's the secret sauce that counters despair, anxiety, and divisiveness with common goals we can all share and act on. It's the ultimate big tent. For more solutions now unfolding across America and a long list of actions anyone can embrace at home and in their communities, I hope you'll dig further into Total Garbage, How to Fix Our Waste and Heal Our World. I'm Edward Humes. Thank you, Next Big Idea Club, for taking an interest in my book and for listening today.
Thank you, Edward. That was Edward Humes with five big ideas from Total Garbage, How We Can Fix Our Waste and Heal Our World. Also check out our book bite for Wasted, How We Squander Time, Money, and Natural Resources and What We Can Do About It by Scott Hoffman and Byron Reese. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.